all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Thursday. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Dr. Kristen Lyerly is here for the hour as well, with a couple of healthcare segments coming up this hour. One about crisis pregnancy centers and another about the public health impacts of a changing climate. But before we get to either one of those, Kristen, we did talk to Joe Zepecki in our last hour, mostly about the Tony Evers' second inaugural, which you attended this week. And last I heard, you're still feeling really happy about.
My feet are a little sore, but my soul is happy.
There you go. A bit about Republicans in Congress and their still inability to elect a speaker. But I also talked to Joe about some of the last acts of the January 6th committee, which included releasing transcripts of depositions. And what we've learned from those releases, they include new information about the fake electors plot and its ties to Wisconsin folks, including Senator Ron Johnson. And so I wanted to ask Joe a bit about whether he has gleaned anything from the release of new information. And so I wanted to share his answer on that. So here's Joe Zepecki.
I think there's tremendous significance. You know, we've heard a couple different defenses of the fake elector plot. And chief among them was that the individuals who were the actual electors said, no, like we were just told this was a contingency plan just in case one of the court cases, went through, or the Trump campaign won in court, then the backup documents would be there and it would be all squared away. We are now seeing more evidence that that is total and utter nonsense. The letters B and S come to mind, because it is clear that the Giuliani, Cheesebro, Johnson conversations understood that this was being directed by the Trump campaign. It was not in accordance with the reality of what had happened in the Wisconsin election in 2020. And Andrew Hitt himself, the former GOP official, is saying, you can just sort of see in his text messages, he understands that what they are being directed or asked to do is crazy. He's going, oh my God, all caps. Can you believe that Ron, referring to Senator Johnson, is asking us to do this stuff? And so it is important. I don't know that it changes the game entirely, but what I feel really strongly about is, it means we have to do more investigating. There has to be some measure of accountability for this. And the work that the January 6th committee did really revolved around, how do you hold Donald Trump accountable, even if the only accountability is in the eyes of history, so that the world can see what he did every step of the way. We need that same level of transparency and ability to have accountability for Ron Johnson. Unfortunately, he's not really answering the questions. He's trying to get out of it. But I would love to see a mechanism. Maybe it's the state suit, where we continue to get more information and get to the bottom about what actually happened. Because as we approach the 2-year anniversary, I believe tomorrow, of the attacks of January 6th, we know an awful lot more about who was involved and how serious the threat was to our democracy. But we don't know everything, and the American people deserve to. We're a strong enough country to know exactly what the bad actors did and how close they came to really screwing up the American experiment in profound ways.
So that was Joe Zepecki talking about that. And Kristen, you were at the inaugural, which included the swearing in of other officers, including State Attorney General Josh Call, who now has another 4 years to consider things like looking into the Wisconsin angles on the fake electors plot, which wouldn't be happening if you weren't watching Josh Call getting sworn in this week.
Yeah, it really underscores the importance of this past election. And that was a message that kept coming up over and over in the inauguration speeches: protecting our democracy, coming together, righting the ship, and just moving forward, looking to the future instead of being mired in the past the way that we have been. I really look forward to holding Ron Johnson accountable. He can't just say, I wasn't there. I don't remember. You know, he just brushes it off. Yeah, yeah, right. He just brushes it off. Like, no, this is our democracy and you're a key player here. And we, as the people of Wisconsin, have to hold him responsible for this behavior.
Exactly. All right. Let's set up the two different segments we've got coming up here. Hometown Health at 7:30 with Joel Charles on a changing climate being a health issue. But first, coming up, Jessica Scharfenberg talks to us about crisis pregnancy centers or pregnancy crisis centers, something that you as an OBGYN, this is an important topic to you.
This is a very important topic. So when I was an abortion provider in Sheboygan, it was not uncommon for people to come in having called one of those 1-800 pregnant lines, thinking that they were going to get the information that they needed in order to be able to make decisions for themselves. And what they found was they were given bad information. They were given partial information. Ultrasounds were performed that were inappropriate, inadequate, and they were kind of being channeled down this pathway where abortion wasn't an option, but their options were taken away. So there are lots of these crisis pregnancy centers all across the country. They're often funded by state legislatures. I believe here in Wisconsin, we do fund these. And, you know, they violate the medical ethical principles of patient autonomy. So right. This is going to be a very interesting segment.
Yes. Yeah, so we're going to talk to Jessica Scharfenberg, Chief Executive Officer of the Health First Network in Wausau. And that's going to be coming up right after this break. You're listening to Up North News Radio on a Thursday. Many ways to listen or watch what we do. You can watch us online through the Up North News Facebook page. Just look for Up North News WI or Bull Falls Radio in Wausau. And if you ever miss a show and want to see the listing of episodes, go to civicmedia.us and click on our show page there. Dr. Kristen Lyerly is still with us. And speaking of Wausau, we're heading that way now where we're going to talk to Jesse Scharfenberg. Jessica is the where have you got it here? There we go. CEO at Health First in Wausau and president of the Wisconsin Family Planning and Reproductive Health Association. And is going to give us some perspective on crisis pregnancy centers, what they are, what they are not, perhaps how they are funded, other things that we need to know in case you or somebody close to you is in need of comprehensive care regarding pregnancy. And so, Jessica, it's nice to have you here. Thank you.
Thanks for the invite. It's really interesting, Pat. The song that played right before we went into this segment was about lying. I think it was a perfect intro to what we're going to be talking about today. We've been doing a lot of work around crisis pregnancy centers, especially post-Dobbs. With that decision, abortion access has been diminished in Wisconsin. You can't receive an abortion in Wisconsin. We have individuals going out of state, which we are more than willing to help. But what we're seeing is crisis pregnancy centers, we like to call them fake healthcare centers, are really increasing their marketing and their media saying, hey, come to us instead. We're going to help you get that abortion. We're going to help you with those services. These different entities are religiously affiliated, and their ultimate goal is to stall the woman to a point where when she would actually be able to receive an abortion, she's no longer able to because they've taken up so much of that time, which is a really, really dangerous aspect for individuals. We have one right here in Wausau. I don't know if any of you guys read the Wausau Pilot and Review. There was a great article right before the holidays around that, of who they are, what they do, what they don't do. They like to go under this guise that they're a reproductive health center. They're not. They don't offer comprehensive reproductive health care. They don't offer contraception, very, very limited STI testing. They don't have medical staff, which I find it's really interesting is they do what they call these limited ultrasounds to confirm pregnancy on individuals. And I remember when I was pregnant and I had to go in and I had an ultrasound by an ultrasound tech, and then the physician and radiologist had to read that before they could give me any results or tell me anything. Yet they have these quote unquote trained individuals doing these limited ultrasounds, telling people whether they have a heartbeat or not. And especially early on in pregnancy, and Dr. Lyerly, I'm sure you can agree with this. If you are going to do an early ultrasound, you need to do a transvaginal ultrasound if you're going to detect a heartbeat. And they're trying to do transabdominal ultrasounds and telling people whether they have a heartbeat or not. Come on, that's not even possible.
Oh, it's so true. I've seen people come in with pictures from the crisis pregnancy center. And, you know, ultrasounds are challenging to interpret sometimes. I've seen people show me a picture that's clearly their bladder, and they were told that it was inside of the uterus. I mean, these centers are unregulated. They are non-medical. They have no legal obligation to provide pregnant people with accurate information. And they are, this is really important, not subject to HIPAA or required by law to maintain client confidentiality. So they can go out and talk about you and share your name. And you don't know that because you're assuming that they are a medical center.
And that's really interesting. So we've had secret shoppers. There's other entities, reproductive healthcare providers in Wisconsin, who have sent secret shoppers into these entities to kind of get the gist of what's going on and what information is being provided. And in their confidentiality statements and all the paperwork that you sign, it flat out says that they'll make the decision whether they're going to share your information or not. And it's like, excuse me, you're going to say you're a healthcare entity, yet you're not going to protect that information. However, according to HHS, they are not covered entities. So a lot of, and this is a lot of mumbo jumbo, but covered entities are what you fall under with HHS if you are billing for the services that you provide, and you have to follow HIPAA if you are a covered entity. They don't bill for their services, so they are not a covered entity, so they don't have to follow HIPAA, and they don't, which is really scary for individuals. And especially right now, you have individuals in very vulnerable states, and they don't have access to the services that they're looking for. And they're saying, hey, come over here. I mean, the number of ads I'm served on like Facebook or social media of these pregnancy centers, if you're thinking about an abortion, come see us. Well, they don't offer all options counseling, and they don't do referrals to abortion centers or have the connections to get people where they need to go, which is really, really dangerous in this post-Dobbs environment that we are living in.
We are talking to Jessica Scharfenberg and Dr. Kristen Lyerly about crisis pregnancy centers and the many shortcomings and, frankly, the misinformation that's out there. And what I find so interesting is that it's the truthiness of it, if you will, that we have essentially these borderline fake clinics, claiming to be more than what they are. And it's all about an issue that is based on attacking Planned Parenthood as being a place that is only an abortion provider, when Planned Parenthood is an example of a place that does provide very comprehensive health care for women, Kristen.
Yes, not just comprehensive, but thoughtful, sensitive, careful. The number of people who came to me and said, this is not the experience I thought that I was going to have here, because we talk about everything. And the goal is to try to help them make the best decision for themselves, not to force them to have an abortion. And I think that that is the perception that they get from, you know, much of the public, but also especially these crisis pregnancy centers who target vulnerable people, young people, under-resourced people, and try to delay them in receiving appropriate, accurate care.
And Jesse, it's not just Planned Parenthood. I wanted to set up Kristen with that, but obviously so many other places will provide real and comprehensive health care.
Yeah, there's 43 Title 10 reproductive health clinics in Wisconsin. And with this whole post-Dobbs situation, Title 10 clinics are protected. We are able to provide all options comprehensive care to individuals, which is amazing. And we have all of these centers. But what you will see is these crisis pregnancy centers, all of them are located within 1 to 2 miles of an actual Title 10 or reproductive health clinic. So I will give you an example. Back in 2008, which was before my tenure here, we used to be Family Planning Health Services. services, our website was fphs.org. Hope Pregnancy Center here in Wausau, but fphs.com, to try to confuse people on where to go for comprehensive care. And it's like, come on, guys. And I am not against having resources available to individuals in our communities, but let's be truthful about what their resources are. So if you want to be a gospel missionary that's going to offer resources to individuals like diapers or clothing or that type of a thing, say that you're a gospel ministry and that that's what you do. Do not say that you are a reproductive health clinic, because you are not, and you do not offer reproductive health care. And, you know, we've talked so much in the past 3 years about misinformation, and this is just another one of those things of misinformation. And they're just really capitalizing on the Dobbs decision and being out there in your face saying, here, come here, come here. Well, you offer very limited services that aren't comprehensive. It's not according to ACOG. It's not according to the CDC. So we have all of these governing bodies as a comprehensive reproductive health care provider that we have to follow. And those are the standards. That's not what happens at a crisis pregnancy center, which is super, super unfortunate. I mean, they start talking about how abortion is linked to cancer and this and that and the next thing. And we're going to go on this abortion recovery journey and this and that and the next thing. And that's not what science says. So when you're going to say, hey, come here for an abortion, yet you're also saying, well, we need to talk about an abortion recovery journey, those things don't mesh.
Mm-mm. And if you're receiving appropriate, sensitive, thoughtful care, you wouldn't need a recovery journey. That would all be part of the care that you're receiving. And I love that you talked about how they mentioned the false risks of abortion. They tell people that you have a higher incidence of breast cancer, infertility, mental illness, preterm birth. They suggest a high complication rate associated with abortion, when we know that abortion is one of the safest procedures that people can have. They overestimate people's gestational ages and say it's too late for you to have an abortion. So people walk away from these clinics thinking that they don't have any options. They downplay the impact of pregnancy and childbirth on people's lives and health. And many times people have come to see me saying, I was told that this would make my name your condition, my blood pressure better, when in fact, we know that it doesn't. And if they are misrepresenting early in pregnancy, the impact on your long-term health, and you're making decisions about your long-term health based on this information, you are putting yourself and your family at risk.
It seems like we need to be talking about proposals for greater regulation and oversight of these entities. The last thing, though, is that complicating things even further is the continued closure of rural healthcare facilities. And there's a direct tie-in to politics here in that, you know, there are only about a dozen states that continue to refuse the Medicaid expansion. And those dozen states represent less than a quarter of the population. And yet in the states that refuse to expand Medicaid, they accounted for 74% of all rural hospital closures. So Jesse, this problem of access to good healthcare in rural Wisconsin and rural America, this is something that is going to be a constant for the foreseeable future. And people are going to want to look for whatever they can find for care rather than just a quality care place, which I'm sure is what you are trying to advocate for.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of those things. Politics are playing with healthcare, and it's not good and it is not safe, but that's the reality that we are currently living in. So advocating, telling the truth, getting the information out there is so important right now. So individuals know what their options are for safe and quality comprehensive care, which is super, super important, because they can say, hey, I have this crisis pregnancy center down the street. They're going to do X, Y, and Z for me. But that's not the actual truth. So we're trying to get the information out so that people know where their resources actually are.
Because how can you make the best decisions for yourself in the context of your own life if you don't have the right information?
Exactly. Jesse, if anybody wants to learn more, where would you suggest people turn to?
reach out to me. WIFRA has been doing a lot of work around this. The Wisconsin Alliance for Women's Health, Sarah Finger, is amazing. They have a lot of information on their website as well. Just we're trying to get as much accurate information out so people can make informed decisions about their health care.
And would that be healthfirstnetwork.org?
Yep, healthfirstnetwork.org.
All right. Appreciate it very much. Jessica Scharfenberg, Chief Executive Officer of the Health First Network. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and look forward to visiting again soon.
Thank you.
All right. And Kristen, when we come back after the break, we're going to jump right into an interview with Joel Charles talking about climate and health.
It's all connected, baby.
That's the way to put it. So we'll hear from Dr. Charles, and then Dr. Lyerly will talk to us again a little bit more before we hear from Luke Mathers and wrap up our conversation here for Thursday on Up North News Radio. If you want to sign up for our newsletter, go to upnorthnewswi.com and hit newsletter in the top banner. We'll be back. Back on Up North News now with Joe Zepecki joining us after a celebratory week, shall we say, for folks who are supporters of Governor Evers. So bright-eyed and bushy-tailed describes neither one of us, but we'll prattle on as best we can. Joe, how are you? Happy New Year.
I'm good. Happy New Year to you and to your listeners. It certainly was a fun way to start the new year at the inaugural events earlier this week. It was a good time, and maybe too good of a time.
Perhaps, but I recall them well, and they are times that, you know, it's not just a party. It is a time of optimism when people are standing in, you know, that beautiful marble building and thinking about the possibilities. And look, we know a lot of it, you know, is probably unwarranted given the times that we live in. But, you know, I think you and I would both be honest about it. Inauguration days and start of session days, you do get an extra dose of imagine how good things could be, you know, in another time and place where people cooperated a bit more, shall we say.
Yeah, it is a remarkable thing to witness, the swearing in, taking the oaths of office of the state's constitutional officers, all of the pomp and circumstance. You know, there's a reason for all of it. And part of it is to sort of put in perspective that we are fortunate to live in a place where we, the people, are sovereign and get to decide who represents us and who leads us. And it really is a day where there's amazement and wonder and optimism, and we certainly saw that in the speeches. We certainly saw that reflected in the folks who are partying and dancing and having a good time. And really, the other thing that really jumped out to me was it's a day that's a lot about politics, but doesn't really seem super political. It's more about state pride, and you know, you got the University of Wisconsin marching band, and you've got people from all across the state and different cultures represented, you know, old and young. It's just, it was a really cool celebration of the great state of Wisconsin, in addition to being a really rewarding capstone to those of us who worked really hard to try and win as many of those elections last year as possible.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the school kids there. And again, you know, you and I both know on those days where those fourth grade field trips are coming through, you actually kind of puff up your chest a little bit more and go, hey, I get to work here. And people look at this as the seat of government. And that's pretty awesome. It's actually the building itself, Joe, that sometimes I think we all take for granted. I can't tell you how many times I have looked at that building when coming down to Madison and thinking, if we were starting a state today, would we build anything like that? It just reminds you that we once lived in a country, well, we didn't live in it, but other people lived in a country where they marked their state capital by building these magnificent buildings in Madison, in St. Paul, and you know, in so many others. I think there's only like one building where the state capitol kind of looks like, you know, your typical office building. And it's because it's supposed to be special, the seat of government.
Yeah, the Iowa State House is another one that is absolutely stunning. It's really cool. If you haven't been down to Madison in a while, get on through there. No COVID restrictions. The building is open. It's a great way to spend a day, and it never kind of ceases to stop you in your tracks.
Exactly. And so back to the inauguration itself, and of course, Governor Evers elected to a second term. Not a lot of surprises in what he said. And look, I wasn't expecting that Republican leadership was going to say, oh my gosh, we've seen the light. We'll give you everything you want. But, you know, to still like Robin Voss and Devin Lemieux did, you know, to refer to the speech as divisive when you consider where public opinion is, not just in the election, but on the issues that Governor Evers chooses as priorities. I just don't know that divisive. I mean, maybe they think it's a word that works for them. Maybe it's the best word that works for them, but I don't know that it's the correct word.
I think the bit is getting pretty worn out at this time. And, you know, when we talk about, listen, Governor Evers, in his speech, essentially mocked the Republicans who are standing in his way on these issues that have 60, 70, 80% approval from the people of Wisconsin, whether that's expanding Medicaid to provide more health care to folks and to save the state money, whether that's raising the minimum wage or protecting a woman's right to make her own health care choices or legalizing marijuana in any sense, whether that's medicinal or recreational. But he did it in the most Tony Evers polite, golly gee, aw shucks way possible, and cited the Marquette Law School poll and just sort of said, listen, I don't expect people to agree with me all the time. That's not what this is supposed to be about. But I'm really glad that a lot of people agree with me 60, 70, 80% of the time, according to the latest Marquette poll. And so Republicans tried to no avail for 4 years to paint Tony Evers as something he is not, which is, you know, a radical, you know, far out there Democrat. And he's just not. And so I think it's more sort of revealing that they don't know what else to do than go back to the same playbook on the first day of his second term when it didn't get him what they wanted last time, because what they wanted was to defeat Tony Evers and they didn't get that done. And I know we'll get to this, but it sort of goes to show that the chaos in the Republican Party and the lack of direction is not just limited to what we're seeing at the federal level in the U.S. House of Representatives this week. The rot goes all the way down to these state legislatures where Republican parties, they may have big majorities, but they're sort of at sea. They don't know which way is up and where they're heading. They don't have a direction, so they just sort of resort to calling people the same names they always have. I don't think it's going to go very well for him, but we'll find out.
Well, we'll see. We'll get to that chaos in the House in a bit here. But sticking with the fact that Evers is entering a new term, it was interesting to note that Fred Prehn, the squatter on the Natural Resources Board, finally, you know, gave it up. And three different squatters on the Technical College System Board gave up the positions that they've held on to 20 months past the expiration of their term, thanks to a state Supreme Court that you know, said it's okay to go against democracy, essentially. But be that as it may, my question for you is that a good sign about what happens to the more than 100 nominations that Devin Lemieux and the Republicans in the Wisconsin State Senate are still sitting on? Or is this just a few Scott Walker appointees who have decided to you know, accept reality and move on, and we actually won't see progress with the nominations in the state Senate?
I think it's possible to hold two thoughts in your head at the same time, and that's kind of what we have to do here. And the first thought is that it is very good that these appointees who overstayed their welcome and were no longer representing the will of the people as expressed by an appointment through a duly elected chief executive have finally given up the jig and have, you know, taken their papers and gone home. That's good. It means that democracy is a little bit stronger today than it was yesterday when these folks were staying past their welcome. The second thought is, I'm still not sure we should have a lot of optimism that the Republican-controlled legislature is all of a sudden going to find religion and be like, oh, of course, we'll consider and vote up or down on all of Governor Evers' appointments. This is a legislature, and we just talked about how they don't have much of a direction. So, you know, they've got some new policy ideas that we can talk about that are pretty out there. But I have a hard time believing that if for the last 4 years they were dragging their feet on nominations and giving people even an up or down vote, just letting them hang there, I'm not sure that they're going to rush to to fill these. And that's too bad, because the role of the legislature on a lot of these appointments is to advise and consent and confirm. And we learned all of this in grade school. It's your job, folks. And so let's hope that Republicans will move more quickly on nominations. But I don't see any real reasons for optimism.
No, it is very much in line with the editorial that I gave earlier this morning that says, you know, not working and not governing is not a bug. It's a feature in the political DNA of right wingers who want to prove government doesn't work. And the only way they can do that is by not doing the work themselves. It's why I've often said those who hate government the most should be trusted the least to run it. And that sadly is where we are right now. But I always have to ask the question that at least has a little tinge of optimism to it is, as Governor Evers and Republicans talk about this next state budget and a record budget surplus of $6.5 billion, is there any way to game out a way that the two sides could reach a deal that doesn't happen very late in the session or even well into the summer? Is there any scenario, or would one or both sides just simply have to give up so much that there's virtually no hope for a timely budget resolution?
I mean, define timely, right? The thing is supposed to be done by June 30th. It's slipped a little bit in past years. You know, once during the Walker era, it certainly lasted until what, like September or October. So it's not unheard of. Listen, I think the enormity of the state surplus under Governor Evers' leadership, I think we're talking about, you know, $6 billion. Am I right on that, Pat? Is that number?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Just the sheer enormity of the number means that there's going to be urgency. There's going to be enough kind of wiggle room in the budget to give enough folks wins and what they want. You know, there's enough to do more money for schools that the governor wants. There's enough to do more for shared revenue and for municipalities that a lot of even these Republicans are hearing from their small town mayors and city administrators, like, hey, we're dying here. So I think the flexibility that the surplus provides means that there will be, you know, maybe not a grand bargain, maybe not by the stroke of midnight on June 30th, but I think this is about as good a shape as the state could hope to be in heading into a biennial budget cycle.
And let's wrap up moving into the halls of Congress, where as we record this, the sixth ballot is getting underway, voting for the speaker. The Democratic leader has won the first five votes in the new Republican-led House of Representatives. So I ask this as facetiously as possible, because you deserve these now and then as a Democratic operative, or if you're a Democratic member of the House. Was the first day with the three ballots that failed for Kevin McCarthy a great day or the best day ever?
You know, I think it's a great day any day that people sort of have to take some accountability for their actions and their choices. And what is happening in Congress right now is Kevin McCarthy is finally facing the consequences of his own actions. So what a sight this has been to behold. You know, if there's a Guinness World Record for smirking as you are defeated and voted down time and time again, it's in danger of going to Kevin McCarthy. It's just madness. And this is what we have been warning about and talking about really since, you know, the moment Trump came down the escalator. The toxicity within the Republican Party is so pervasive that they can't even agree on how to organize the House. There's not a single member of Congress that has been sworn in to do their job, because they can't do the brass tacks, bare, like, nuts and bolts of just getting the House organized, because their conference is in disarray. What a bad look for Republicans that they can't get their stuff together.
No doubt about that. Joe Zepacki, thank you so much. Always good to have the visit. Have a great day.
You too.
We actually had time for another question with Joe that we removed out of editing because of time constraints. We're going to play that early in our next hour, because I also asked him about the January 6th committee releasing the transcripts of more of its closed-door interviews. And that included new information about the fake elector scheme, Wisconsin ties to it, what Ron Johnson knew about it, and what people said about Ron Johnson. And so you'll hear from Joe Sopecki about that in our next hour. But back to Governor Evers and his second inaugural. After that was done, he met yesterday with mayors of Wisconsin's five largest cities, Madison, Milwaukee, Green Bay, Racine, Kenosha, a closed-door meeting to talk about how the legislature could make some changes to how local governments are funded. And I think the most important thing to note is that state revenue sharing used to be 12.5% of the state's general budget. 12.5% went to local governments to support them. It's down to 5% now. And state Republicans need to start doing their fair share to support their constituents at the local level. This day in history and music next. You're up north.
Kick the dust up.
Well, if you're hearing Luke Bryan, it must be time to hear more about the Luke and Bryan Dueling Tangents Radio Extravaganza from a new undisclosed location from the Mathers Man Cave somewhere. You're in Madison proper, right? So the Mathers Madison Man Cave?
Get it all
sorry,
out,
there
Aaron.
Must be there
get,
must have been some, out, something Aaron. In the connection there. My apologies, Luke.
No, I am a proud resident of Sun Prairie, new homeowner.
Oh, that's right, Sunny P. I forgot. Yep. So from the man cave there, who and I noticed. See now, look behind me are family photos and a couple of Wisconsin knickknacks. Behind Dr. Lyerly, I can see all this evidence of. We the three of us guys combined are not 6% as smart as she is.
Oh, and yes, correct.
What totally. Do you have? Yeah, I don't, back
6% is even generous, a little yes. Pat. Like 6% is pushing it. That's on a I know. Good day.
So, what do you have back there? What's on the new home studio?
These are my three Wisconsin maps. So, I got a map of the state parks. I have a map of supper clubs and of breweries here in Wisconsin.
A map of supper clubs.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that was the newest addition to it when the room was being put together. It's a work in progress. It's a little bit of a fixer-upper, but I got enough that I can come in and join you remotely for the broadcast. So those are my three Wisconsin maps back there.
Is that supper club map perhaps related to the old-fashioned, or whatever it's called, by Ron Faiola?
I don't believe so. I don't have that map. I believe there's a different map for that one.
Gotcha.
But
again, look, goes for the visual.
As a matter of fact, yeah, Pat just happens to have these books.
The two Ron Faiola books that are back here.
I was going to say, he's got them back there at the ready.
Kristen, we got to do the road trip. We got to do the road trip this summer of supper
yes,
clubs.
Bring it. I'm ready.
Luke, Aaron, you in?
Yeah. Yep. Let me know when and where.
You're in charge of arranging the Civic Media bus that's going to take us from supper club to supper club.
All right, we'll see what we can do. We'll make it happen.
We can find a celebrity bus driver, you know, just, I mean, not Dom, for the love of God, you know. But I was telling Aaron earlier that I think that because, you know, Devil's Advocate with Dom and Crute is on, you know, all of the Civic Media stations, and this program is on all of the stations, at least during the 6 a.m. hour, and then in the middle, some people hear some shows, some people hear others. I thought, you know, this kind of reminds me of Homeroom. So we're like the Homeroom of Civic Media. And that's that's where the Charlie Brown teacher sound effect came from. As we think of you, Mr. Mathers, as our hometown teacher.
That's a very generous comparison. I do not have command of this classroom one bit. But I see Dr. Lyerly has her hand.
I have to go to the bathroom.
Sorry, we don't have a hall pass for that.
I was going to say, you got to wait to the commercial break. That's what we consider passing period around here.
So, I already went to the bathroom.
By the way, an unknown state's, an undisclosed state senator just texted offering to drive the bus. So
there you go.
We are going to be taking that leading Wisconsin politician up on that generous offer, believe me. So Luke, you want to take over homeroom here and tell us some of the highlights of the Civic Media Empire or just your own show, if that's the highlight you got?
Well, there's a lot in store for Civic Media. At the end of 2022, we had a little bit of a internal email going around asking, please don't spoil any of the locations that are coming. I haven't rewound the tape to see if this was specifically directed at me. It wasn't like I was getting a slap on the wrist. I think it was kind of just a friendly reminder. So I don't want to let the cat out of the bag too soon, but I can tell you that Civic Media's got a lot in store for 2023. We're really excited about the team that we're putting together, the areas across Wisconsin that we will be covering in 2023. So we're really excited. Hopefully over the next couple of weeks, I'll be able to share more specifics with you, Pat. But as of this morning, it's really more about building the anticipation rather than sharing anything else. And we've got a terrific Packer game coming up on Sunday Night Football. That is an excellent little logo that Dr. Lyerly is sharing around with.
I believe Dr. Lyerly was silently making the pitch, you know, to get a Green Bay station. So somehow I know that's on your to-do list. Short-term or long-term, who's to say? But Kristen is going to be relentless until we get her a hometown studio to go visit.
She starts calling me up about 2 a.m. saying, Hey, what's going on for Green Bay? And I'm like, come on, doctor. Like, I can't share.
Give me the news.
Details. I can't. So
I guess when Pat has too many old fashions, he splays out like a lizard on his heated tile. When Kristen has too many old fashions, she calls Luke and demands a new radio station.
I do.
Oh, trust me, she's a mean drunk. I've gotten texts from her. It's just, you know. People take on different qualities, but moving on to...
We're very excited. The fact that this time last year, Pat, we were one radio station getting ready to launch the second station in Waukesha. And now that we cover markets in Wisconsin Rapids, Richland Center, Wausau, Oshkosh, it's been a very busy past year. And I can tell you for sure that 2023 is going to be just as busy, if not busier. So we're really looking forward to it.
And Amory, which you neglected. So Amory, that means an extra stop on the bus.
Hayward. Yes.
Yep.
Hayward. So well, and in talking specifically about shows, I mean, we have Todd Alba on once a week. We have Chad Holmes on once a week. We have Terry Bell from the newsroom on occasionally. But obviously there's, and we talked to you about dueling tangents.
Once a while when I'm not in traffic.
Yes, exactly. We need to get crewed on. I mean, Kristen Bry, I mean, she and her producer Jane both went through just a nasty bout with COVID and or something else. And we have to figure out how to arrange a visit with them on the show here and just continue to make this the homeroom for Civic Media. We want everybody listening to every show, either live or through a podcast in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's excellent. And I'm joining Todd now on Tuesdays for Tangents with Todd. So we're going to do a little fun with that. It's going to be a regular as well. So
with Todd.
Like look at that alliteration.
What's going on Tangents here? With Todd.
So now when does that happen?
That's going to be Tuesday mornings at 10:30.
Tuesday at 10:30, Tangents with Todd.
Yep, and Luke. But yeah, Tangents on the Todd Alba Show.
Very nice. I mean, look at the growth here. We've got, you know, just this week, Sarah Godlewski is starting, you know, kind of biweekly visits with us to highlight various women who are leaders all around Wisconsin. Kristen's visiting with us with Hometown Health on Thursdays. She's also just sitting here on Monday mornings, just out of the goodness of her heart to help me wake up on Mondays.
For the music history. I like that.
There you go. So I almost forgot Melissa Kay from locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids. I asked her yesterday, do you guys have a jingle? Cause otherwise I'm willing to sing that, you know, cause jingle. It's such a great name.
Jingle.
Yeah.
Can we get a jingle?
Sing it with me, Kristen. Locally grown radio.
Oh.
Y'all keep laughing like you don't want that. I just don't understand.
I can't sing. I'm on one of the Hawks Bar and Grill jingles without. It was an unwilling thing. The microphone was recording. And
wow, kind of this has a too many old fashioned vibe to it.
It's turned into an ad, so that one's just there. I hear it all the time.
All right, thank you, Luke. All right, coming up tomorrow: Carolyn Fiddler, Mark Jacob, Dan Schumacher, Kia Vakil, and more. Earl Ingram is up next in Waukesha and Oshkosh. Stephanie Miller in Madison. Todd Alba in Richland Center. Wausau and Amory. Have a great day. See you Friday.